Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, folks, and welcome to Compound Interests Podcast. I am John Najarian from Market Rebellion, and I am delighted to have Hall of Famer, multiple Hall of Fames, Doug. Is there a Hall of Fame that you're not in? I mean, the gentleman, folks, of course, that I'm talking about is Doug Flutie. He is Heisman Award winner in 1984 for Boston College. One of the most epic finishes of any game ever. And I'm a guy who went to Berkeley, Doug. So, you know, I know a few things about, you know, like we called it the play at Berkeley, where, you know, they had the seven laterals and things like that against Stanford. And the Kevin Moen spiked the ball at the trombone player. As he came down.
I love it. That is, you know, there's a handful of them that are at the top of the list, and that's definitely there. That was the most unbelievable finish. And the band just made it that much more spectacular, you know, running over trombone players and band on the field. It's cool to just be mentioned in those finishes.
Well, and you, my friend, like I say, folks, I mean, Canadian Football Hall of Fame, College Football Hall of Fame, the stats speak for themselves. Doug does a fabulous job also speaking for the sport, because he is still an announcer for the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, and I have enjoyed your voice on those broadcasts for years, and your insights, Doug, because we all know that there are people that play the game, some of whom, like yourself, can really describe potentially what's going on through the coach's head, in the players' minds, what kind of adrenaline is going on and all that kind of stuff. You do all of that when you're talking about Notre Dame football, especially, you know, when that stadium is rocking with 84,000 or whatever, screaming their heads off.
It's been a lot of fun. I'll tell you, to be involved in a nationally prominent program like Notre Dame and be there week in and week out where every game is a big deal and every game is a big game. It's been a blessing. I've worked with Mike Tirico, and I would love Boston College to be on that platform, but they're not. So it's the next best thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening and watching right now that have appreciated your career an awful lot. And I know one of the people that represents you, Kristen, was telling me all kinds of funny stories about the Hail Mary pass and so forth. And I know every year, and one of these years I'm going to go, Doug, because I've never been to the Heisman Award dinner. Hopefully it won't be virtual. Hopefully it'll be there this year in New York. But if you could tell folks just a little bit about, obviously, we remember the play when you had that Hail Mary, but a lot of folks don't really focus on another player that when you were watching films or maybe when you were celebrating and talking about it, you kind of thought, maybe if you would have thrown to this other guy, you would have still won the game, but you might not have been Doug Flutie.
I'll tell you what, we run the play, I roll right, throw the ball towards Gerard, blah, blah, blah. The backside tight end is supposed to stay in protection. There was an inadvertent whistle. They had snapped the ball. They reset. On the reset, two things happened. The guy that was covering Gerard in press coverage walked out over Kelvin Martin, the wide receiver that is maybe faster. Figured, I'll slow him down, which allowed Gerard to be the first guy down the field. Secondly, I knew they were going to go three-man rush. So during the little delay there, I walked over to the tight end. I said, hey, get wide and go down the backside boundary. You might get the ball. Go. So I told him to blow off his pass protection. So I dropped back. I intentionally scrambled right, get out there, and a linebacker's running at me, so it's time to throw it. I just launched for the end zone. I wanted to get out there and look backside. After the game, in the commotion and all that, you know, Gerard caught it, touched it. Pete Cascarillo was the backup tight end, and he was the guy in the game at the time. He said, you know, we had a chance. And I kind of thought, you know how every receiver is open.
They're always open.
I was open on the backside. I was here. I was there. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. Years and years go by. Maybe I met Bump into Pete a few times, and he said, you know, we had a chance. And I go, yeah, I know. Well, last year was the 35th anniversary of the pass. And I looked at a bunch of stuff because I did a bunch of pieces on it and all that. And I found the film of it. I found the shot where Pete is all by himself at about the 10 to 15 yard line. The backside corner that should have been over there had drifted all the way across. He was the guy that bumped into the free safety, making a play on the ball, allowed the ball to go through. So the guy that should have been there was like 30 yards away. So Pete would have, if I could have set myself and made the throw, Pete would have been a walk-in. But he said he was glad I didn't throw it to him because he probably would have dropped it.
Well, you'd hate to be that guy because you'd go from being the goat to the goat. But, oh my gosh. And, you know, a great player finished behind you in the Heisman voting that year, Keith Byers. I remember him because my brother was playing in the Big Ten at the time, Doug. And I remember what a beast he was. I remember Keith, we thought he'd have a great career in the pros. Ended up not being so much. A lot of those Ohio State running backs, they've taken such a beating in the Big Ten. And or they might not be able to catch the pass out of the backfield.
Well, back then, they carried the ball 30-plus times a game. You know, it was, hey, where the guy, Herschel Walker was a perfect example of that down at Georgia. But back then, you had a featured tailback, and you gave him the rock, and he pounded it and got stronger as the game went, that type of guy. Keith actually was a good third down back. I thought Keith caught the ball well out of the backfield and did a lot of other things well. But he was a big physical guy that could catch the ball as well. So, yeah, a lot of those guys, I mean, and I guess if you go way, way back, you talk about Earl Campbell, but guys that just took such a pounding through their college years and early years in the NFL and were done, where nowadays they keep a good tab on that. They rotate guys at the NFL level. Some guys are just third down backs. Everybody's got a, quote, stable of running backs now when they rotate the ball. That would be frustrating. I don't know. Go a whole game, carry the ball 8 times. You feel like you barely played if you're a tailback.
Right. Well, I remember also that your Boston College team was loaded. There were a lot of great players on that team. I know you guys had an Outland Trophy winner.
Nose guard, Mike Ruth at nose guard. You know, it's amazing. You talk about Boston College, you know, Notre Dame, yeah, all these top round draft choice, all that. Boston College, with my group, our two starting tailbacks that alternated, both played, had very good NFL careers. Troy Stratford down in Miami. Kenny Bell was his backup, but had about 5-6 years out in Denver. The guy that backed them up was a guy named Steve Strahan that played 4 or 5 years as a special teams guy. Our tight end was drafted by the Patriots, played a little bit, and was done. We had Steve Trapillo, a first-round draft choice in the offensive line. We had Mark McDonald, a first-round draft choice in the offensive line, played in Minnesota. We had Mike Ruth on defense at nose. We had Billy Romanowski on defense. A guy named George Radichowski played in the NFL defensively as a corner. My brother Darren, Gerard Phelan, Kelvin Martin had a great career with Dallas. Those were 3 of my receivers. I mean, it was like, you know, we were at Boston College, and they weren't like 5-star recruit guys. You know, we all came in and became what we became while we were in college. You know, we improved there. We weren't coming out of high school as 5-star recruits. But you go back to that team, and I always felt like we were the overachievers. Mm-hmm. But really, we had some talent.
Yep, you guys had some talent that the other folks overlooked. And, you know, in some ways it was to your benefit, and in other ways it was, you know, quite sad because of the talent that, you know, as a guy that watched more than played, I played 4 games in the NFL, Doug. So then I was cut, so I ended up watching my brothers. One tried to play at Green Bay, one tried to play for the Lions, and the other, Pete, who's on the CNBC with me and business partner of mine, he played for 6 years. Was not the star, but he was a good player. But unfortunately, you know, never got the shots. Never got, you know, and in some ways, it's not like you're rooting for the guy to drop in front of you. But in other ways, that's how you get your shot. Somebody else has to, you know, mess up, either get hurt or make a big mistake and the coach gets frustrated and puts Pete in instead. But he got to play 6 years and he loved it.
I'll tell you, so much is being in the right system with the right guys around, especially the quarterback, with the right guys around you to give you the opportunity to shine. Another guy that was from our Boston College team, I just thought, John Boza, his sons, both the Ohio State boys. You know, John was a great defensive lineman himself. So, you know, so much is, and then a lot for me at the quarterback position was the guys you had surround you, having a coach that believed in you, give you the opportunity so that when you are on the field, you're not always looking over your shoulder, afraid to take risks. We were talking before we started this about Jim McMahon out in Chicago. I think Jim McMahon is the only quarterback in history that could have gone in there with Buddy Ryan and Mike Ditka butting heads and been able to be as successful as he was and win a Super Bowl. Because all the rest of us are looking like, you know, you got a great defense. You don't want to screw up. You want to protect the football. Be careful, all that. Ditka gets upset. He's in your face, and you got to deal with it. Jim was the only guy that would just give it right back. Jim didn't care. He didn't care what you thought. He went and did his thing, and that was kind of what that team needed.
Yep, you're right. It was sad to see that team dismantled, Doug, because clearly they had multiple Super Bowls, potentially, but Super Bowl appearances at least, and perhaps wins, because when you have a defense like that, and I'm still friendly with Dent and Wilbur and Otis and, you know, a bunch of the guys that mainly Dent and Otis that I see a lot at the games. And it was so sad, things like, you know, Dave Duerson, you know, speaking of Notre Dame, I know you're a, like I say, broadcaster for him, but this is one of the best guys.
No doubt.
And for him to come down with that CTE to the point where he took his life and took it in a really hard way because he wanted to preserve his head so that the medical people could exactly try to figure out, A, that he did have it, and B, if there's any way they could prevent some of the sorts of injuries that he ended up getting. That was just so sad because
no doubt.
Great guy.
I couldn't believe that when I heard it because I hadn't kept in touch with him. I just knew him from a couple of years playing together, and exactly a class guy, first class, and to see how that happened. It shows you we don't all know what's going on up in the head and what's going on and how dangerous it can be. And, you know, we all as football players take it on ourselves. We know it's a physical game. We know my knee's a wreck, my back, I had a back surgery. I still go out running on it. I don't care. It's a mess. But, you know you're going to get beat up. But those are injuries that they're hard to measure, hard to tell what's going on. And we all, how many times? Oh, I got dinged. You know, how many concussions? I don't know how many concussions. I know I had two concussions with memory loss over my career and a bunch of, you know, getting dazed and banged up and all that. I'm 57 years old now. Maybe I'm just a little more forgetful because of my age more than anything, I hope. But for the most part, I feel fine and things are good. But I played 21 years professionally and put pads on for 35. You just never know. And you know, we all take that inherent danger. It would be a crime. And if the NFL actually knew the dangers of concussions before they actually led on to all the players, and that was what that big discussion was all about.
Yeah, well, we can hope that some of the equipment, I mean, like that Vissus helmet, the one with the flap right here in the middle and things like that, I met the doc that helped him create that. Seems like a lot of players love that versus the others, and you're seeing more and more of those helmets, the new generation helmets that seem so much safer. Then I remember bike helmets, Doug, that were actually, you know, with those stupid inner tubes around
there. Yeah, the double tube thing, liner, you pop it up, and then.
And it would pop.
They would all deflate on you, and you didn't realize it.
Yeah.
And I had one of my concussions towards the end of my career. I got slammed to the ground. I hit my head and all that. And that was late in the first quarter. Actually, Drew Brees came off the bench, finished that game. And, you know, I kind of came around the beginning of the third quarter. And the equipment guys were like, you know, you had no air in your helmet at all. And you know, I'm like, you just don't know. And you know, the big thing back then was And Rydell was trying to keep coming out with a lighter helmet, lighter, because the player, the bike helmet was really a heavy helmet. And I always was cringed about how light some of the newer helmets were, because it just didn't feel safe to me. I didn't know the science behind it. But I haven't put on a newer helmet. I haven't put on a helmet in probably 10, 15 years. So I don't know what they're like now.
Now, maybe if I could switch gears just for a sec, Doug. The Flutie Foundation for Autism. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you're doing a charity event tonight. Is this for that? Or is this yet another charity that you're involved
in? No, this is us. This is the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism. We have a yearly gala that, it's a big deal. We have our band will go set up, and we have a bunch of Boston area musicians come down and sit in, and guys from the band Boston, guys from the band, Jay Giles, Aerosmith, you name it, guys have sat in. It's just been so much fun. And then it's one of our big fundraisers. So it's virtual tonight. You can go to flutiefoundation.org and connect through that if you'd like to join and be a part of it. We actually have couple of real rock stars sitting in. We videotaped some stuff where the band jammed, like through the Zoom thing. I do not know how it works. I just played my part and laid down my tracks, all right? Also Cody Lee. Cody is a young man that, when we started our foundation, it was a few years in, we did a bowling tournament out in San Diego, and my band always kind of sets up in areas. So this woman comes up, Cody Lee's mom, and asked if her son could sit in and play with it. He has autism, he's blind. And we're like, oh, okay, sure. This will be cute. And then you try to hold a conversation with Cody, and because he has autism, it's very difficult. And I'm thinking, oh, this may be a train wreck. Come on, please, it'll be cute. If nothing else, it'll be cute. Cody was probably 8 years old, would be my guess. He sat down at the piano, and our band joined in as he started to play. He played Who'll Stop the Rain, a CCR song. And oh my God, he belted it out. He played the piano. I was like blown away. Fast forward to last year, a year before, Cody Lee went on America's Got Talent and won America's Got Talent. And Cody's going to do a song for us tonight, virtually and all that. Just an amazing story, because if you met Cody, he has autism. He is blind. He conversationally, he's a little awkward. It's tough. And when he gets behind the piano and he starts to sing, it's amazing.
That's fantastic. And we'll make sure we put a link to it in this, Doug. And it's DougFlutieJr.org, or what is it?
FlutieFoundation.org.
FlutieFoundation.org
will get you there.
Okay. We'll make sure we put a link to it. What do you think about people getting back into stadiums, whether it's hockey, football, baseball, basketball. Do you think it happens for the NFL? Let me put it to you that way. Will college and NFL happen this fall?
I say yes. I say they play. Whether people get back in the stadium or not is a liability thing, I believe, that's going to be really tricky to negotiate. And I honestly, personal opinion, no science behind it, the numbers that I've seen, if you're under the age of 55, go back to your normal life, go to the games, hang out, have fun. If you're elderly, if you have pre-existing conditions, protect those people. The rest of it, we got to get back to normalcy. And I really believe that. I live in an area in Florida that three people over the 3-4 month window that this has been going, three people came down with it, or four. Two came from New York and came down to our town, so they don't count. But over a 4 month window, I mean, we're just, a sleepy little beach town, and it's different. We're not New York City. We're not in the middle of a metropolis where everybody's on top of each other, and that's what you get at a football stadium. So yes, I think the numbers may go up, but as far as how lethal it is to people that are healthy and say under the age of 50, I just think we got to live our lives and protect the others.
Yeah, I agree.
That personal opinion, don't know. That's not science, people. Doesn't mean that Doug Flutie said it's okay.
Right. And I'm not saying it's okay either, but I have the exact same message, Doug. My message after listening to Fauci every single time he's on TV, literally every time, because my brother and I are on that channel, and Dr. Scott Gottlieb and all of these folks. I have a lot of respect for what the virus can do to all of us, but in particular to that group that you define, over a certain age, pre-existing condition, obese, type 2 diabetes, all these kinds of things. Outside of that, if people had to wear a mask to go to a stadium, it wouldn't be the end of the world. I think we'd still have a good time. Now, I think that many of the venues will not be happy for quite a while, because even if they get people back in there, Doug, depending how we consume our beverages and all that sort of thing, I think a lot of revenue is going to be down. But getting back to a little bit more normalcy, having some of those folks out there in the parking lot, you know, doing their tailgating and so forth, especially with groups of people that they're already hanging with, I don't know that that spread is going to be dramatic. And again, if you live with somebody who has any of those things Doug and I talked about, be very careful and don't do that. But if you're somebody else who doesn't fall into those groups and you don't live with one of those people, then I think you can get out there. And the economy itself, Doug, depends on it. Because if we're afraid and we don't go out, have you been involved in restaurants and things like that? I know you're involved.
I do. I have a restaurant that's in a casino up near Foxborough, Plain Ridge Park. And I also am part owner in some enterprises with my cousin. Actually, we've done a few restaurants. Locally, it's a perfect example. There's a young man that has about four restaurants locally, and they're all shut down, and he can't work. He got very creative in his takeout business and almost maintained on. We're different. Down here, like I said, you wouldn't even know. After about 2-3 weeks, first of all, people that live in Florida, kind of rebels. They're going to go their own way and do their own thing anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, okay, we'll appease you for a week or two, but that's about it. And they were back to normal, and he did well. He's even opening another restaurant soon. So he stayed ahead of the curve. He got creative in how he did his takeout, extended his area, and did a bunch of things. And I just think so many small businesses took it on the chin. People that are, especially if you were just starting out and just getting your legs under you and just getting started, and this thing hit, your business is shot, right? And we still, in a lot of areas, small businesses aren't allowed to open. Yet we see all these riots in the streets and people out there demonstrating and all that, but that's okay. So that it's a double-edged sword. Fought through it. I think we're past the worst of it. I think we got to get back to normal life.
I agree. Yep. And it's a point I make all the time, Doug, about, you know, the states that are staying locked down to a greater extent. They want to point to, well, Texas is seeing a spike in cases, and yet it's a state of 29 million, and they're calling a spike when they get to 2,400 people and things like that. We care about all 2,400 people, and we hope they recover. And based on what we know, if they're, for instance, Governor DeSantis in Florida, where you are, Governor DeSantis said the average case has dropped from 67 years old to 35. Now, I guarantee you it's going to have a different mortality rate at the 35-year-olds that are on average getting it because they're back out in society versus the 67 to 85-year-old group that, you know, it's a lot more dangerous for those folks. It's not that we don't care about them. We're just playing the odds, and we're saying, look, until there's a cure, what are you saying, that we're not going to have businesses? That everything's going to stay shut down? I mean, nothing works if we do that. Coming back in a smart way is the right thing to do, I think. Again, I'm not the doctor, but I'm saying, you know, be smart about it, but let's get back out there and get these businesses back on their feet.
Yeah. Sounds like you and I are on the same page with a lot of this. And, you know, we could dig deep, but a lot of, you know, it all, you can take numbers, just like in football, you can take numbers and do anything you want with them. you can spin them a certain way, you can show the increase, you can show, but bottom line is, you know, if we take accountability on our own for all aspects of life, I live at the beach and there are a lot of crosswalks, and there's been a big to-do over the last year about people crossing the street, getting hit by cars and things of that nature. Well, you know, there was a crosswalk there, and you just, look, we grew up, look both ways before you cross the street. When no cars are coming, you cross. Okay, you're at a crosswalk. Great. Just make sure. Make eye contact. Wait till they stop. But they, you know, so then they added these flag things to go across. Now they have flashing lights and the flags and little pylons in the street. And it's like, because someone else got hit recently. And it's like, at some point, America, we have to take accountability for our own actions in every aspect.
Yeah. Now, folks, Doug has his own podcast coming with Matt Schaub. It's going to be called Quarterback Corner, or it already is out there.
QB
Doug.
Corner, yes.
Okay, QB Corner. And I encourage you guys to listen to that. How big is DraftKings, Doug, and how big is sports betting? Because one of the things about us being locked down is it has really focused people in on a potential for all these remote ways to game, you know, and so it's not just DraftKings, me picking a team and things like that. You've got Dave Portnoy out there from Barstool Sports, your you know, hometown guy. Yeah. He has been killing it. And he's playing my game because he's trading, and he's pretty good at it. And he's like a Pied Piper. All these people follow him in, and they're thinking, if Dave can do it, and Dave's just this knucklehead that created Barstool Sports, as smart as it is to create something like that that's worth $500 or $600 million. So I'm not ripping on Dave. I'm saying, you're a brilliant guy,
good for
Dave.
You.
But now he's trading too. And he's,
you know, and I say this about trading, and I don't day trade, but if you are willing to take the time and keep up with everything on a daily basis and follow, you can do that. And you can be aggressive and mess with it and do it, but you've got to be locked in 24/7 on it and go. I like my peace of mind. I like sitting back. I like being able to sleep at night and not worry about it. I think it's fun. And then you start talking about DraftKings and everything else. What has brought what took the NFL to new highs and sports in general became the legalized gambling and the online gambling. People love it. And they my generation, while I was playing, the whole fantasy football thing started to take off. And of course, me being me, I fight it. I fight change all the time. I don't like it. And I never got into it because I was playing at the time it got popular. And then after I retire, it's like this thing that everybody has knows like the back of their hand, and they know the ins and outs of it. And I would be at a disadvantage from the get-go there. But that's what's – so the average Joe – is educated on personnel and who's where and how many yards and how it, and it's changed it, and it created a whole new level of popularity in professional sports.
Yep. It's one of the things that really might help drive it too. Like you said, to new levels. Let me switch to one more quick story that I know is one that the viewers and listeners will enjoy. And that is where Chris Berman and Belichick are talking, and Doug is playing for New England at the time, folks. And
I'm 163 years old.
And Berman tells Belichick, you know what? This guy can do a drop kick. And Belichick, being, you know, this crazy man who's also so brilliant and so underappreciated by the people outside of Boston, because the people in Boston, of course, he's a saint, you know, he's revered. Everybody else hates the guy, hates him because all he does is win, you know, just win, baby. I know that was, you know, the Raiders, but that become, it's not Davis anymore, Al Davis. That's just win, baby. That's the New England Patriots. I mean, for all these, you know, for the last 8 years, it's been Super Bowl win, Super Bowl win, Super Bowl win, lose to the Giants. Super Bowl win, lose to the Giants. Super Bowl win, beat, you know, it's amazing. Right. Yeah. So anyway, when Belichick is out there and he hears this, tell us about that story and how that played out.
Chris Berman had come to a practice. Chris had seen me messing around dropkick for years. I always go out in pregame, well before pregame, in my shorts and t-shirt, just kind of warming up and messing around. And I would dropkick, something I've done all my life. So Berman tells Belichick. Belichick calls me in the office after practice. First of all, I thought I was in trouble. I thought, you know, bring your playbook, you're gone. You know, I was useless. All I did all year was get the pom-poms out and cheer for Tom Brady, right? It's like, come on, win me a ring, Tom. So I walk in the office. There's Belichick at his desk, and standing behind is Chris Berman just beaming. Like, and Bill says, hey, can you drop kick? I say, yes. He goes, is it still legal? I go, I believe it is. It is in Canada. I don't know. So, it's still legal. He goes, well, work on it. We'll practice it tomorrow. So I kicked three balls in practice. I hit the left upright, hit the center in the butt, and kicked the line drive through. And then he said, oh, it's something we can work with, right? We were going to do it on Monday night against the Jets. Didn't happen. We didn't get in the field goal range. He put me in spur. I just happened to be standing. First of all, we're playing Miami in a meaningless game. We're down by 14 with 5 minutes to go. Castle started the game instead of me, which kind of irritated me because it was a meaningless game. I thought it'd be my last hurrah. But he needed to find out about Matt. So Matt played. So I stood there, froze my tail off the whole game. And I just happened to be standing next to Bill. And he sees me, goes, hey, we score here, you're kicking it. He didn't get that sentence out of his mouth. We were in the end zone. And I'm like, are you serious? Now I'm 43. I've been standing around for 3.5-4 hours. I'm locked up, rip the jacket off, grab a ball out of the equipment guy's hands, kind of punch one into the stands, jog out, and we do it. And there's a whole story about the huddle and stuff that went on. But I basically told the offensive line to negotiate with the D-line. Tell them what's going on, because if they rush this thing, it's going to get blocked. And I don't know how much conversation went on, but they played it straight like it was a two-point conversion, and only the outside guys came up the field and kicked it through.
Fantastic.
But the best part's this, and it started a trend, I believe.
Okay.
I hit the field goal. I fist pump. Offensive line, all the guys turn around. They run at me like we just won the Super Bowl. We're still down 7 with 4 minutes to go. You know, but so I go to the sideline to just – I'm going to go hug Bill. And Bill's not the most touchy-feely guy in the world, right? So I get the awkward hug with Bill and all this stuff. Well, after the game, I meet up with my daughter and my wife, and she says, you blew off Tom Brady on national TV. I'm like, what? Tom came out for a high five. I went right by him to Bill and blew Tom off on the high five. So I guess it's become a thing. And I think what happens is Tom's kind of awkward with the timing of high fives, and he gets blown off all the time.
Well, I've seen awkward with Tom. And I've seen that, I wouldn't call it a highlight reel from the, from Stockton. Indianapolis when they do the testing, and he run a 5.4 or whatever.
I tell you what, he worked so hard at his footwork and his quickness, and it pains. Tom's my all-time favorite quarterback. Let's get that straight right off the top. Best I've ever been around. It's so frustrating as a fan of Tom, and see in the middle of a game, 3rd and 6, and the C parts, and Tom steps up. It's like, run, Tom. Just go. Just fall for it. You're 9 feet tall. Just reach with the ball and fall. And it just, but his movement in the pocket, you know, he's got good feet. He moves around. He buys time as well as anybody in the pocket. It's just sometimes you wish he, because you see guys like Lamar Jackson run with the ball. You see guys tuck it under and go at the quarterback position now that are just amazing. And that's the one thing that a Tom Brady, a Peyton Manning never had.
Right. Winding up in just a couple minutes, Doug, because again, I want to be respectful of your time, but I wanted to ask you, how do you think Tom does down there in Tampa? This is a big change.
Oh, it's a big change. You know, my first thoughts go to, I bounced around a lot throughout my career, and I kept learning new offenses. Mm-hmm. And it always took you a couple of years till you knew it like the back of your hand, and it was instinctive. they do a lot more now in the off season, although it's Corona off season. So, but that they can catch up and get past all that. But the talent he has around him, he's got Godwin and Mike Evans at receivers, guys that he hasn't had. You know, he's had the little slot quick guy and this, that, and the other. The last big time receiver was Randy Moss for one season. So it's going to be interesting to see Tom with a guy like Mike Evans, a big go-to type guy, and what they have. They've got some talent. They've got some athletes around them. Now, you know, Tom.
How about Gronk? What about Gronk coming back?
I think the great thing about Gronk coming back is maybe he's not going to be an every down tight end. Maybe he is. Maybe he's ready for that. But he's got to feel healthier than he ever did over the last 5 years he played. You take that year off, and, you know, he's got to feel healthy. And I think Gronk will be Gronk. I think it's not going to be like a rusty Gronk. I think Gronk will be Gronk.
Right. And he's still a young guy, Doug. I mean, when you look at it.
He's only 31, I think, right?
Yeah. When you compare him to, you know, tight ends that are still playing at 36 and 37 years old, and he retired at 30 or 29 or whatever it was, and he's a year older now, and we'll see what happens. But I agree. I think that rest probably made a huge difference for him.
You know, there's a little bit of getting back into the swing of things and getting hit again and all that, and that'll be gone in the first week. He'll be back in the week, and he'll be – I think he'll be off and running. And for Tom, when he was at New England, he won Super Bowls by getting – you know, he had these moving parts. He had a decent little slot receiver, okay guy on the outside. But his tight ends and his tailback that was a good receiver is where he would get his matchups. He would get Gronk in a position to work on a linebacker or the tailback to work against the linebacker. And those are the guys that made Super Bowl runs for them, because all of a sudden these little quick backs out of the backfield are one-on-one. He gets 11 catches and Gronk's getting his matchup for a couple of big plays. Those are the positions that you can get those matchups.
Doug, I can't thank you enough, my friend, for coming on. Really appreciate it. Kristen, I really appreciate her hooking us up. I got to go to one of those Heisman dinners. She's invited me before, and I haven't been able to get there. But I know that you're one of the kings of that, and that all these kids they love you, man. They love you. And they still get to enjoy you because of the Notre Dame games and things like that. So
thank you very much. It's a fun weekend. It's fun to see all the guys come back. And, you know, it gets a little depressing because we all become a family and we lose people, you know, every year pretty much. And Joey Bellino last year was the first year Joe wasn't there. And, you know, that we all feel like a family. And it's such a fun weekend, and to see everybody when they come back. And then we get to meet the young kids that are, you know, it's funny when the young kids walk in the room, they have been king all year long, right? And they win the Heisman Trophy, and we're very appreciative of their abilities and all they do and all. But they walk into that room, they're just another guy.
Yeah.
And they realize these guys have done a lot. I got a long way to go.
Yep. Well, you've done a lot, Doug. We appreciate what you've done. Appreciate what you're doing with the Flutie Foundation. We'll put up a link to that and to your QB Corner podcast. And again, nothing but good things to say about you, your family, and wish you guys well. Stay safe, and we hope to have you back sometime in the future, sir.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.